What's up, everyone? I'm Mary Lynn. Consider me your weirdest friend. Welcome to our third stop on the road trip, Arizona. I don't know about you guys, but sun and vodka sounds amazing right now. Known for the Grand Canyon and sharing the Four Corners with Utah, Colorado, and New Mexico. We all have exes, but how far would you go? Perhaps murder? Sex, violence, and a trial that made headlines nationwide. Don't be surprised if I don't show up one of these Sundays and you find me dead after Travis Alexander broke up with his girlfriend. This is the story of Jody Aries. What's up, everyone? For those of you who are listeners, thank you. Welcome back. And for those of you just tuning in, hello and welcome. One cool service announcement. I recently got a coloring book of serial killers off Amazon. Super jazzed up about this. I've been keeping myself busy running, working out, and of course, I have stocked up on wine. So if you are listening to this in the evening, or perhaps you like a midday cocktail, pour yourself a glass. You made it through the week and settle in. We made it to Arizona. It took us 62 hours and 35 minutes. Another long road trip, but worth it. This is a story I've been wanting to cover for so long. It has a ton of twists and turns. It's about obsession, rage, and sex. I hope you guys had those wine glasses full or a cocktail and you're settling in. This is a longer episode than I normally do. This case had a ton of information. Some of the information that I will provide to you is from the exact incident investigation report. I really wanted to set the scene for you guys so you could get a full feel for the case that made national headlines. In 2006, Jody was new to the scene, testing her talents as a saleswoman and photographer. She would meet Travis Alexander at a convention in Las Vegas, where he worked as a salesperson and a motivational speaker. Within a couple days, Travis and Jody would enter a sexual relationship. This would not be uncommon because it was Vegas and people hook up all the time. However, this goes to show you, you never know who you are hooking up with and what they are capable of. Within a year, they would become a committed couple, a long-distance relationship, with Jody living in California and Travis living in Mesa, Arizona. However, sometime in June 2007, after only 5 months into this relationship, Travis would break up with Jody. I think it's instantly a red flag. If you're going to go to the distance and communicate and see each other for a full year and you finally make it official, what happened in 5 months? However, even though they broke up, they still continued a sexual relationship. And I get it from both sides because sometimes one person isn't always ready to let go. Dating is hard. This would be comfortable. But all in all, it's a bad move. We all have tried to hang on to something that wasn't good for us. So let's just call it what it is and make it a clean break and move on. As if these weirdos couldn't get any stranger, she moves from California to Arizona and starts cleaning Travis's house for extra money. Let me read that again. She starts cleaning Travis's house for extra money. Where were Jody Aries' friends? I mean, if my friends told me it was a good idea to clean my ex's house for probably less than $100, that would be a no for me. And I feel like in this instance, Jody really needed the support of her family because I think that this was Travis's sick way of keeping Jody around. But shocking, the cleaning gig didn't work because she moves back to California in 2008 and begins pursuing a new love interest named Ryan Burns. Ryan Burns was a colleague of Jody's and they also met at a convention. She was on her way to meet Ryan Burns in Utah when she decided to take a detour to meet Travis. The following information is the exact reporting narrative given to the officers and detectives. This is from the Direct Investigation Incident Report, number 2008-1610844. Please be advised as some of this content is graphic in nature. On June 9th, 2008, Officer Flores responded to 11428 East Queensboro Avenue. I know some of you are already Googling. This was the information that was given to officers. The friends of the homeowner had found Travis deceased in his bathroom. Forensics would determine that Travis had been dead for at least a day or two and had multiple wounds to the chest and neck area. Detectives started questioning his friends to obtain any information. Roommates Zachary Billings and Enrique Cortez stated that they last spoke to Travis approximately 4 to 5 days prior. Travis had a scheduled trip to Mexico planned, so they assumed that he had already left, and it was not uncommon that Travis would just leave for a trip and not tell anyone. Travis was set to go on a trip with a woman named Maria Hall. Recently, Travis and her had talked about where their relationship stood. She had told Travis that she just wanted to be friends. She also said that she didn't really care if he took someone else because apparently Travis had just broken up with another girl named Lisa. Maria became concerned because she had not heard from Travis and the trip to Mexico was scheduled for the following day. Concerned about his welfare, she drove to his house after attempting numerous times to contact him and no response from inside the home. She contacts Michelle Lauer and Michelle's boyfriend, Dalian Forrest. They were able to enter the house through the garage using a keypad code they obtained from another friend. When they got into the house, they contacted Travis's roommate, Zachary, and his girlfriend, Amanda McBrien, who were in the other upstairs bedroom. Everyone assumed that Travis had went to Mexico. This didn't seem impossible to me. For me to believe, because I know people in my life that sometimes just go off the grid or they just leave. So if my friend did that and my friends were like, yeah, I haven't heard from so-and-so, I really wouldn't think much about it, just knowing their behavior. So for his friends, they didn't really think about anything of it either. They decided, let's check. So they go to Travis's bedroom where they find the bathroom door locked. They were able to find a key and opened it to discover blood on the carpet leading into the master bedroom. Dried blood in large amounts were on the floor, walls, and on the floor. They looked closer in the bathroom and found a deceased male sitting in the shower with the door open. They called authorities, and Enrique Cortez, another roommate, had been asleep in his room, so they woke him up and exited the house. I can vouch for Enrique because I'm also a super hard sleeper, so when I'm out, it's like lights out. From the start, before anyone could determine what happened, all his friends mentioned Jody Aries. They continued to let police and investigators know to look at Jody Aries. His friends mentioned that they had recently broke up, but him and his new girlfriend had their tires slashed. She stole Travis's personal journals, his email passwords, and told Travis that she would always know about any new girlfriend he started dating. This goes past Instagram stalking 100%. This is full out psychotic. Actually, I don't know who was more crazier. The fact that she was cleaning his house because he asked, or the fact that she basically broke into all of his stuff. Eventually, his friends advised detectives that it seemed like she gave up and went back home to California to be with her family. They all assumed she was still in California. The logistics of the crime scene are important because detectives needed to determine if a crime had been committed. I know for some of you right now, your wheels are turning and you're like, yes, Mary Lynn, a crime has been committed. But I just want to shed some light on this, that the detectives that were investigating this had seen tons of murders. And honestly, this was not uncommon that subjects would commit suicide in this manner. The victim was lying in the shower of his master bathroom, what appeared to be an injury to the neck. It was described as a large cut from one side of the neck to the other. As detectives entered the home, they noticed it was clean and in good order, but they did notice a strong odor associated with a decomposing body all over the home. As soon as they entered the front door, they could smell it. So my question is why didn't his roommate smell it? I mean, they're literally coming in and out, sleeping, eating. Did they think maybe it was just the garbage or that needed to be taken out or like a sewer line? I just feel like that would just be, especially if it was a person that was dead for a couple of days, that it would just be a really super disgusting smell. Nothing appeared to be out of the ordinary except a stand-up floor cleaner in the middle of the living room. As they moved upstairs, they noticed the master bedroom had double doors, but only the east door was open. At the top of the stairs to the south, was a large game room or like a media room. They noticed a black camera bag on the floor, but the camera was missing. Once they entered the bedroom, they noticed a large reddish stain on the carpet, which continued down a long tiled hallway. The bed did not have any linens, and the pillows were sitting on the west side of the bed on a chair. The bathroom hallway to the east was a large walk-in closet leading to the bathroom area. Instead of walking through the bloody hallway, detectives walked through the closet to get a look at the main part of the bathroom. Once in the bathroom, the body of the deceased was in the standalone shower. The body was in somewhat a sitting position, with his feet to the north and his head to the south. He had clear signs of decomposition, discoloration, and some skin slippage. Small punctures to the center of his chest, and he had small amounts of fluid flowing out of them. Other puncture wounds and lacerations were not showing any signs of blood and or fluid flow, so this indicated that his body could have possibly been washed off post-mortem. No signs of weapons on or near the body, but a clear plastic cup that appeared out of place. Perhaps the killer used it to wash the body. The quick examination of the bathroom revealed large amounts of blood all over the sink and mirror. The detectives determined that before they could continue any further investigation, they decided to obtain a search warrant. While walking by the washer and dryer, they noticed what appeared to be a small reddish-brown stain on the top portions of the washing machine. It appeared to be consistent with a blood stain. Ryan Burns would testify when Jody arrived at his home, the only indications that something terrible had happened is that she had Band-Aids on her fingers and was several hours late. She told Ryan that she cut her fingers while working as a waitress because she had to make a bazillion margaritas that day. She also vouched for herself that she was late because she got lost on the way to his house and could not communicate because her cell phone died. Ryan would describe her as a slightly shy in groups, but warm and energetic. He also mentions that she was stronger than she looked, noting that she had a six-pack. Okay, girl, so she works out, she takes good care of herself. Officer Flores interviewed Travis's friends. He started with Maria. She knew Travis from the Church of Jesus Christ Latter-day Saints. She had seen him at church activities. She knew he worked out of his home selling insurance and was a public speaker. Seems like a pretty normal dude. They had scheduled a trip to Mexico June 10th, and she saw him on June 2nd at church. Maria didn't know much about Jody, except that she heard she was kind of obsessive and manipulated Travis's Facebook account. This is wild, you guys. She would also use the doggy door to get into the house because she wasn't invited. Could you imagine if you were doing your dishes or cleaning or sleeping and your ex came through a doggy door? Like, hey, what's up? What? Like, that's insane. The doggy door. Maria does call Jody a stalker and mentions that Jody was baptized by Travis in the LDS church. Next up was Travis's roommate, Zachary Billings. He knew Travis for a couple of years and was charged $450 to rent a month to month. He was charged $450 to rent a room month to month. Enrique Cortez recently just moved in a couple weeks ago. They attended the same church. They all pretty much kept to themselves. Zach mentioned that he spends a ton of time with his girlfriend, Amanda. So this isn't like a frat fraternity setup. This is basically three dudes living, working, doing whatever, and saving on rent. So for them not to be close, just this kind of makes sense to me. The last time Zach saw Travis was Thursday morning. Zach was leaving his house about 11:30 to pick up his girlfriend, Amanda. He didn't see Travis when he returned. Detectives asked the obvious questions, where do you think he went? And they all responded the same. He would leave on business trips and rarely tell anyone. Both roommates confirmed that they carried on Thursday to Monday like normal, visiting family, working out, going to dinner, going to work. They did nothing out of the ordinary and did not seem concerned with Travis. They did text Travis to see how his trip was, but never got a response. But it still takes my mind back, guys, to the smell. If you're talking about a decomposing body for that long, they didn't smell anything. I mean, it seems so bizarre to me. So the police brought up Jody, and Zach told police they argued a lot. She would clean the house occasionally, and she would just show up in the house, obviously using the doggy door. They would have arguments about her moving to Arizona. She called all hours of the night. When Zach moved in, Travis was actually dating another girl. Jody was the reason the relationship did not work out. So Travis, to me, seems like he dates a lot. So if he's already had three girlfriends, then it just goes to show like Jody's obsessed with him or just obsessed with sex. I don't know. Zach mentioned that Travis had purchased a very nice black digital camera, Sony brand. Detectives were finally granted a search warrant. Findings found that the large stained area were consistent with blood stains. Some of the blood seemed to be diluted with water. Splatter or cast-off splatter was located on the window blinds. With the large amounts of blood found, it indicated that there was a struggle and the victim tried to flee his attacker. This next part's going to be gruesome and graphic in nature. I understand that if some of you have a weak stomach or need to fast forward, that's fine. I thought this was really important because it really goes to show you the hate that was fueled with this crime. The victim's body had 11 punctures to his upper back between the shoulder blade, two large lacerations to the top and back of his head, one puncture to the back of his neck and ear, four puncture wounds to his chest, three puncture wounds to his belly, one laceration across his throat, which actually severed the right carotid artery. Four lacerations in his left hand, as forensics would determine that was a defensive wound, as well as one laceration to his right thumb, again, defense wound, and one single gunshot wound to the right brow. The wounds would be determined as not hitting the chest cavity, so that just means that the stabbing didn't actually impale any of the organs. It didn't even go below the chest cavity. And the defense wounds showed that the victim did try to protect himself. However, medical forensics determined that the shotgun was not the fatal wound. It only disabled him. What would kill him would be the final throat slicing. The murderer used a single-edged blade, no longer than 5 inches, and the gunshot was approximately 2 to 3 feet away. This is now listed as a homicide. On June 19th, 2008, the camera was discovered in the washing machine. The digital card had many pictures on it, some of which had been recently deleted. The police were able to recover these pictures. They found Travis naked, posing and exposing himself in the shower just before his death. The last photo was him sitting in the shower with his right side exposed to the person taking the photos. That photo is currently on the internet, and it's also on my Instagram as well. I want you to understand that anyone taking photos of someone naked and exposing themselves is showing real signs of vulnerability, and you have a personal connection with that person. You wouldn't just take off all your clothes and just take photos of yourself naked. I mean, I wouldn't, but I don't know what people do. A couple photos were taken that showed someone standing over the body and also one of Travis laying on his back. The deleted photos were stamped June 4th, 2008. Jody Aries was lying nude on Travis's bed, posing for the picture. There were 8 pictures total, 6 of Jody and 2 of the victim, Travis. All were nude pictures and sexual poses. This proves that Jody was the last person who had contact with Travis prior to his death and that she had lied about not seeing Travis since April. Homicide suspect, but now motive. Forensics can match the latent print left on the bathroom wall to Jody Aries' palm. They also found mixed results of the DNA test to include Travis, but also Jody Aries' blood and a long brown hair in the hallway stuck to the wall with blood, which also identified as Jody's. They put Jody at the scene. This would make sense now why the bed actually didn't contain any of the linens, because they obviously were laying on it for DNA. And also the washing machine was covered in blood. The blood was diluted with water, which meant somebody tried to clean it up. So now they know it was Jody Aries, and it takes 4 years to begin the trial. The official trial with opening arguments begins on January 2nd, 2013. The prosecutor assigned to the case is Juan Martinez, and he is openly seeking the death penalty. The strongest evidence that the prosecution has, besides the camera, was the caliber round found near Travis's body. A couple months ago, Jody's grandparents actually filed a claim stating that the gun was taken during a robbery. Prosecutors would argue that Jody staged this robbery and used the gun to shoot Travis. They also claim that if Jody could not be with Travis, then nobody else could. The puncture wounds and the recent heartbreak, along with the obsessive behavior, would fall under the crime of passion. Jody took the stand in her own trial to defend herself, and she testified for a total of 18 days. 18 days, guys. I cannot believe the lies that came out of this girl's mouth. If you are interested in furthering this investigation and discovery and doing all that stuff, 18 days she sat and testified, and so many lies. She was caught all the time. But she claimed that she was abused from a very young age. She also, which a lot of people watching the trial didn't understand why she would bring up the sexual references, she would claim that she was forced to have oral and anal and it was painful to her. And she would also accuse Travis of actually being attracted to young girls and young boys, which was insulting to Travis's family because they would be noted in court rolling their eyes and walking out. But the defense actually played its phone sex tape in which Travis wanted to zip tie her to a tree while she was dressed as Little Red Riding Hood. Again, people are into strange things. I don't know. But I think what Jody was trying to do was trying to prove that for him, at least for his character, that he was not this clean-cut vaginal sex guy, that he did all of this crazy stuff and she had to do it. Jody would go on to say that it became increasingly physical and emotionally abusive. She would say that he would verbally abuse her and kick her in the ribs. But doctors would find no bruises, nothing of this abuse. The real climax is when she killed Travis in self-defense after he became enraged following a day of sex, forcing her to fight for her life. This would be the third account of how Travis's death happened that Jody offered not only to the police, but to the jurors. And it would severely damage her credibility. She would actually tell people in interviews that a jury wouldn't convict her because she is innocent. She also downplayed her sexy look from blonde hair and red lips and turned into more of a girl next door while in court. A psychologist for the defense team would testify that she went into fight or flight mode to defend herself, that she was a victim of domestic abuse, and that her friends told her to leave the relationship. But prosecutors would really say, and I also have to agree with this, that how is Travis even abusing her when he was taking a shower? Like, what threat is Travis, taking a shower? It was determined from their findings that Jody Aries told Travis to take a shower with promise of sexual fantasy so he could be at his lowest point of vulnerability. Juan Martinez would also go to ask Jody if she planned on throwing the gun at him to protect herself, and she would reply yes. He would also argue that Jody never mentioned a knife, and her response would be because no one asked her. So her story kept changing, guys, and then finally they were like, what about the knife? And she's like, oh yeah, the knife was there. And they were like, why didn't you mention that? And she's like, because no one asked me. Her attitude was calm and collective, and it was very eerie in the courtroom. Janine would testify, and Janine is actually a clinical psychologist, and she would actually testify opposite of what the defense would say. She would say that Jody did not suffer from PTSD or amnesia, and there was no evidence of Travis abusing Jody. She said that she suffered from borderline personality disorder and showed signs of immaturity. She was also deemed to be unstable with an unstable sense of identity. And Janine would say, and this makes sense, you don't stab someone 27 times, 9 times in the back, slit their throat to almost decapitation, and shoot them and claim self-defense, right? Like for me, if I was self-defending myself, like I would try to obviously like injure my attacker, but I wouldn't continuously go on. I mean, I would get out of there and call the police. So the prosecution is having a hard time believing that Jody was committing this in self-defense. On May 8th, 2013, after 15 hours of deliberation, Jody Aries was found guilty of first-degree murder. Following this conviction, the prosecutors needed to convince the jury that the murder was cruel and heinous. They needed to go to the death penalty. So something that I didn't realize is you can openly say that you are going for the death penalty, but you can only go for the death penalty after the sentence is given. And it has to be a degree of murder or something like that, I believe. So in this case, because it was first degree murder, the prosecution could now set the stage to go after the death penalty, which Jody would counter and ask for a life sentence. The medical examiner would be the only witness. They showed photos of his body, the wounds, and the graphic evidence. The medical examiner would say that regardless if his throat was sliced, multiple wounds, and his head had a bullet in it, it would take Travis 2 whole minutes to die. I want you to think about that. I want you to also set your timers on your phone and sit in silence for a whole 2 minutes. Regardless if adrenaline is flowing, regardless if you can barely breathe, you're still alive for 2 whole minutes. You're still aware, you're still scared. And Jody could have easily called the ambulance. She could have easily done something, but instead she took pictures standing over him. Imagine her standing over you, taking pictures while you struggle to breathe, and she's the last person you see while you die. After less than 3 hours, the jury determined that Jody was eligible for the death penalty. So if Jody Arias does get the death penalty, she will have at least one mandatory appeal. She would also be the first woman to be executed in the state of Arizona since 1930. If she is sentenced to death, she would have to spend 23 hours in solitary confinement. This is a case of love turned deadly and the bizarre turns that gained national headlines. What sealed Jody's fate was that she actually documented her own killing. This is a whole different level of manipulation. And what is even more shocking, guys, if you go out to YouTube or you go and you see all these interviews that she actually does with like local TV stations like CBS and all that, she's seen putting on powder before the interviews, smiling. Honestly, when I was watching them, she's a genuine person when she's being recorded. I mean, it is shocking to me that it was so easy for her to really play the system and play everyone. But she's still guilty of first degree murder, and under that dark hair and weird glasses is a mind of a murderer. She is currently serving time and is selling artwork on eBay. Arizona, you did not disappoint. Tune in next week as we travel to the great state of Arkansas. I'm Mary Lynn, consider me your weirdest friend, and this is 50 States of Murder.